Welcome, citizens. You're listening to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. Here, thinkers and doers always have a key to the city. The mayor is in, so office hours start now.
New Amsterdam starts now. What is going on, citizens? New Amsterdam Radio is every Thursday, wherever you live, where we get to sit and chat with those in the know when it comes to creative entrepreneurship and more. So thank you so much for rocking with me week in and week out. NewAmsterdam.com, that's KNAWAmsterdam.com. And this episode and all the other episodes of New Amsterdam Radio is brought to you in part by SeatGeek. That's right. When you want to get tickets to those events around town, use SeatGeek and tell them Flobito sent you. That's, use promo code Flobito. That's FLOBITO for $20 off your first order. Now, my guest this week, Anita Perez Ferguson, has lived a life and a half, and I wanted to be able to talk about her book series that she has ready and willing to go for your youth, especially female youth. But besides that, being able to be working in politics and to be able to move the needle in her community as well is really something that gave me pause. You're going to enjoy my chat with Anita momentarily, but as I record this, we are in the thick of June. It is Florida grid season, and New Amsterdam Entertainment and New Amsterdam Radio is a proud sponsor of the Orlando Aces. Hashtag Aces up. Florida Grid League. If you have not seen that sport, you are owe it to yourself. Check it out on YouTube or wherever you see your content. It is off the walls. It's bananas. I'm so proud, and we're so proud to be supporting the Orlando Aces. So Aces up, check them out. Grid season's in full swing, and we're going to have some members of the team on a future episode coming up shortly this summer. But enough about all of that. Here's my chat with Anita Perez Ferguson. Welcome, citizens, to another edition of New Amsterdam Radio, hanging with thinkers and doers. We're doing the dang thing, but my guest today is making it happen with the literal arts. We have a whole life or career to talk about, more specifically, the newest book on the pipe, Lupe Throws Like a Girl. Please welcome Anita Perez Ferguson. Anita, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. So glad to be here with you and your listeners today.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time because it's going to be a great time. I've got to say from the top down, the book four is Lupe Throws Like a Girl. Let's go back a bit. You've been writing for a bit of a while now. I mean, even with the Mission Bells trilogy. So talk to me, what made writing your passion, your path?
Well, 6 years ago, I started writing fiction. But before that, I was writing nonfiction with my regular work where I was training women around the world to run for public office. And the first book that came out on that topic was with my co-writer, Lois Phillips, in 2006, Women Seen and Heard. And it's a guidebook of what we've learned around the world about how women prepare themselves to speak to the public and to run for public office to gain that kind of credibility that they need.
Well, as someone who ran for public office, the question I have is why? Why would anyone want to do that? It is bad out there. It's awful.
Okay, you're going to hear story number one, like it or not. Story number one takes place north of Kenya in a refugee camp in southern Somalia. I lived in East Africa for 2 years. I was spending some time in a refugee camp during those 2 years and followed doctors around. There were 40,000 Ethiopians in this camp, and I was with one of the few staff members, a nurse who was helping with a birth. That woman was on her back in the dirt, giving birth to about her fifth child, who was born, was tiny, tiny, could fit in the crook of my arm, and before we could even wrap the child up for the mother, the child died. Mm-hmm. To be out that far from any other part of civilization and to see that there were not even the basic needs for these refugees in that camp, even like aspirin or something that was helped with their hygiene, I thought right then, when I get back to the States, I'm going to get involved in politics and in government to see what I can do to help with conditions like this around the world. That's how this started.
Wow, what a noble endeavor. I'm so glad you decided to be inspired. I mean, I think some people probably internalize that story and go, well, what a bad day, but you decided to help others. And I assume it was beneficial, fruitful for you.
It was beneficial. As a matter of fact, I had been trained as a fundraiser for colleges. I worked as an administrator, raising about $1 million a year from alumni. And raising money is the fastest way into politics. I could tell you that right now.
Yeah.
So I use those skills as an administrator to help campaigns and work for public officials until I then had my own campaign as well.
Yeah. So you make the shift to fiction writing, and your original trilogy, the Mission Bell trilogy, and that is Twisted mm-hmm. Cross, Golden Secrets, and Broken Promises. We'll have those in the show notes to click in and see you later. Takes a look of the historical facts of our history with a new lens. And well, we're seeing more and more authors show us a very naturalistic view of our world history. What was your decision to really shine a light on how things really were, even mm-hmm. though the characters may have been imaginary?
Well, what happened for me was that I was coming out of a deep sickness and didn't really have much energy for politics, for anything. And I was visiting a mission in California. You know, we have a string of them going up the coast, and started to hear a story in my mind about the people who had built that mission. Mm-hmm. Not the high-ranking officials, not the soldiers that were prancing around in the colony at that time, but the actual workers. And in my background, all of my grandparents are from Mexico. I have that same blood in me, and I heard their story. And that's how the first book in Mission Bells began.
Yeah. What has been some of the feedback you've gotten since the release of that book and that book series?
I've had so many people talk to me about the fact that they didn't feel like their family story ever really got written. That we have grand fiestas, that we dress up with folklorico costumes, but the working people that actually laid the foundations of this, what became the state of California, are rarely heard from on their stories, on their challenges, on the brutality that happened for them. And that's why I wanted to tell it.
You mentioned a deep sickness. Was that something you were doing concurrently with writing the first book of the series, or did you wait till you fully recovered to make that jump?
I waited till I was fully recovered. I hadn't thought about writing fiction at all before I got sick. I had some tumors appear in my brain, and it took me out of action completely for almost a year. And by the time those had started to dissipate or shrink, I had no energy for anything until I visited that mission and heard that story.
Wow. That the very definition of inspiration, right? Have you gone back since then, as far as this, like, look how far you've come? Or
I did. I went to another mission that was closer to me and became a docent so that I could learn kind of both sides of the story, the official story from the church's end and what happened with the founding of California. And then also looking at the workers and the history books and the legal papers. And that's how much of the story was informed.
For a lot of authors, there's the rise of the fear, I guess, with the not accepting of different kind of perspectives. Did you come across any kind of haters, anyone that wanted to put the books off of the shelves in your experience, or has been people been really receptive to it?
I'm kind of counting the minutes till it happens. Here's something that I didn't realize when I started to write them, because I was not used to writing for young people. These are all teen books, young adult, they call it the category. Mm-hmm. And I was not used to writing fiction. So I just plowed in with the story as I was learning it and hearing it, and didn't put any, trainer wheels on my books.
Right.
So right away in the beginning, the kid that you're hearing from is leaving his home because he was abused by a priest. Duh, number one. Okay. Then as he crosses over into the New World on one of the Spanish galleons, he's hooking up with a lot of shady characters in the New World that are involved in slave trading. They're involved in a lot of oppressing the indigenous people in Latin America. So there's plenty for haters to approach. There's plenty for the book burners to say, we don't want our kids hearing that history.
Yeah.
So far, the only thing that I have encountered is that some of the directly church-related organizations don't want to have the books on hand. fan for them. But in general, I've had nothing but interest and in kids telling me this is so exciting and so real. And I never really thought about it in this way. So yeah. It's good.
Was that a worry while you were writing it, or was it kind of like, get the story out and let the heavens figure that out? Like, what was the thought process?
It was like not there when I was writing it. I was just writing what I was hearing in my mind on that first book came fast without any limitations.
Well, that dovetails with my next question. A lot of creatives, whether or not you're a breakdancer or farmer or sculptor, we deal with the concept of self-doubt, right? Like, can we do it? Is my voice valid? Can I make a splash in the ocean? Did you have that going from fiction, nonfiction to fiction? And how did you overcome that when writing your original series?
As I mentioned, I tried to get myself some education that would help bolster my confidence in what I was writing, historic fiction. The first was I went to the mission and learned the perspective from their side, became a docent, and actually worked with kids at the mission to see how they interacted. So that was number one. And it was very successful. The second thing is that I went back to school. I went and took history lessons on Latin American culture all the way from Spain, moving on through our own West Coast bases. And that upped my confidence as well. So those were two of the first steps that I took to feel more confident, but actually writing, whoa, that was overcoming. I've never been a good reader myself, so writing was rather daunting in that way. And I joined the NaNoWriMo November Writing Challenge.
Yes.
And I did that. All three of those books were written. The first draft was written in the month of November during the NaNoWriMo. And that really helped boost my confidence, not only to get on a schedule, but also to meet other people that were in the same situation.
Yeah, just for context for the listeners, because you and I are both aware, my first novel was also a NaNoWriMo. It's the National November Writers Month. You get 30 days in November to write at least 50,000 words. And it got me, as they say, lit a fire under my behind to write my first book, High Desert Run. So enough about that, though. It's not about me. Let's talk about the new release, Lupe Throws Like a Girl. This is a brand new series, a brand new perspective, new characters, a whole new breath of fresh air for you. What was the impetus behind this one?
Well, Loopy actually came to me when I was watching some of the girls at the high school on the softball team and thinking about how many Latinx kids and girls especially, you know, were getting involved in softball and how little they knew about the history of baseball Latino players from Latin America.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many in our history, and yet a lot of the kids today are thinking, well, I'm breaking through. I'm doing this for the first time. So that's how I started to put that together in my mind. What if she knew about the Valenzuelas? What if she knew about, you know, the Clementes? What if she knew about all of these wonderful characters from baseball history? And I met a man who used to be the recruiter for the National Baseball League, and his recruiting route was throughout Latin America. And he himself had a camp in the Dominican Republic to train Latin American players for the minor leagues and then help to move them up to the majors.
Personal questions. Were you swooped up into Fernando Mania back then? Or
my dad was.
Okay. Because as an East Coast guy, you're like, the Dodgers, them bums, you know? But like, okay. let's go Mets. I'm actually working in tandem with a podcast, Mark Cheatham. He's going to be a guest on the show, who are already called Black Baseball Mixtape. And kind of the same thing. A lot of kids now have so many more options. They see guys like LeBron who can come out of high school and become a superstar. They have video games. You can be a professional video game player. People say baseball is not cool. To decide to go back and to make a baseball book, did you encounter any kind of pushback from the youngins?
Not yet, but I'll tell you, it's got a lot of other elements besides baseball or softball in this case to it. Loopy has to do her community service hours, which is pretty unique to California. You know, we have 60 hours of community service in order to graduate from a public high school. And she is halfway through the season and gets informed that she hasn't finished those hours. She's got to do it now. She's got to report after practice tonight to the old folks' home that's down the street. And that's where she's going to have to work until she graduates. She's got to do it. She's got a scholarship pending. And so she goes grudgingly. And in that place, she meets an old man in a wheelchair who only speaks Spanish. Turns out he was the recruiter for the National Baseball.
Oh wow, that's a really cool idea. Well, some disclosure. This June, I'm turning a ripe old age of 38, and a lot of my contemporaries are kind of split down the middle as far as like the kids are all right versus these kids nowadays don't know respect and tradition. Where do you stand on that? Like, where have you seen that? You seen the goodness of kids trying to get into the communities and trying to help out? Has this research process informed you that the kids are off in a whole different direction? What's been your take on things?
Number one, it's the volunteer hours are pretty much the norm, like recycling is the norm. And that's really a whole change, a big change from the time when you and I were in school, and you were a lot later than I was, but it's a big change nonetheless. So I have a lot of hope that there is an attitudinal shift, we'd call it, that leaves a lot of doors open for us. They're not assuming kind of that upward trajectory to a big accumulation in their life. Money is the only thing. They love it, like all of us do, but I think they're open. I think they're pretty open.
Fantastic. Throws like a
Plus,
girl.
Roberto Clemente appears as a ghost in this story.
Oh, wow.
No,
When is the release already, is the book already out or is the release coming up soon?
it's just in development right now.
Yeah.
And next year it should be released. But I had the trilogy has three Latino history heroes. Roberto Clemente is the first one, and they all appear to move these historic fiction books also into the category of fantasy. So they appear to help the kids, and they're not only learning about their Latino history, but they're also being inspired in their own lives.
It's funny you mentioned about being inspired by the mission on your run and having the inspiration to write that book. And on your social media, you had this axiom, this mantra of like, don't put off what you dream of doing. And I gotta ask, a lot of people are listening to the show and they may have their own desires to write Ruby Throws Like a Girl or something like that. Why do we put things off? Why, in your opinion, why do we say, oh, I'm too old, I'm too short, I'm too broke, I love the color green, there's no way I can do it.
I think we just get, sat on by all of the responsibilities we've taken on in life, whether it is a student loan, whether it is a mortgage, whether people have had families and are concerned about their kids and put their own dreams aside. All of those things add to that factor. And then there is that factor of we don't think we can do what we really want to do. We limit ourselves. And we don't want to disappoint ourselves, so we just don't try.
Has there been anything where you're just like, I have no clue what I'm doing at all, but I'm going to do it anyway?
Well, when I'm sitting at my keyboard here, I really enjoy the stories. And so I'm kind of just having fun with it myself. And then I realize, okay, I've spent this many hours. How can I make something out of it? Let's put it into a book. Okay, I've spent had this many books. How can I get something out of it? Let's go on somebody's podcast and try to sell these books. I
Yeah,
mean, it
absolutely.
just leads to the next step, but it does take a lot of support, enthusiasm, and people around you that can cheer you on. So back to NaNoWriMo, I came out of that with a number of people in a writer's group. And all we do is accountability each day. We meet every day, 5 days a week, and we check in and say, what are you doing today to get to your goal? Period. They don't read my stuff. They don't critique my writing. They just keep me accountable for getting to the next step in the process.
Well, that's always good to have an accountability group. But you know me, I'll probably find an excuse for everything else. Like, oh, Thursdays. I just don't do Thursdays. Let's try this. But no, I like what you're saying. Having a knowledge base, doing the research, aligning yourselves with those iron sharpens iron is a good way to get that thing done, wherever that thing may be, even if it is a fantastic book series and a career bibliography. But on New Amsterdam Radio, we do ask our guests some certain department questions. Are you willing to oblige me in some of these?
Ready, Freddy.
All right. Do you believe in days off? And if so, what do you do?
I do believe in days off. I head to the beach that I'm very close to, which I love. I head to the botanic gardens. Some people talking about taking a forest bath or a forest shower means you're walking in nature and really cleansing yourself. And I start with yoga most days as well. So all those combined are really nice days off. And if I'm really lucky, I go to a blues show with my husband.
What, the forest bath, you have to like be barefoot in that, or is that like optional?
It's like optional.
Okay. I'm a city guy, you know, I'm from Brooklyn. Like, I think we had one tree.
I've heard of you guys. Yeah.
Everyone collects something. What do you collect?
What do I collect? That's a tough one. I'm trying to get rid of things in my life. When I was a little girl, I collected music boxes.
Okay.
And my mother swore that when I left for college, she would hear the music box playing all by itself whenever something was happening to me 100 miles away. I don't have those music boxes anymore. I actually collect junk jewelry.
Wow.
Okay, there's a confession. Junk jewelry from the thrift shop. I break it apart and I make new things out of it. So,
okay.
So just as a physical activity with really concentrating, I will take apart somebody's old junk and then take a look at new styles and put it together again and have a lot of fun with it.
So when the family sees you come back from a long day with a giant bag of junk, they know what's yeah. up. Yeah.
They know what's up.
Do you have a travel bucket list? And if so, what's on it?
I do not, and I'll tell you why, because I've been all around the world. When I worked with women in politics and training women to be candidates, I was a guest of the United States Department of State and had my way paid as I worked my way around the world. A lot of the trainers that go out to try spread democracy, get people to be participants, they wanted to go to France, to Europe, to Norway, to this. I went all Southern Hemisphere countries. Mm. I loved being in Latin America. I loved being in the African continent and traveling to all of those places. So all of my travel desires have.
Thanks so much for listening to New Amsterdam Radio. Learn more about the show at newamsterdam.com. That's KNEW amsterdam.com. Until next time, this city is yours.